So Jeremy Price is with us today. I think I could be wrong. Correct me if I'm wrong. I guess the first time I really remember meeting you was at the MSE show in Oklahoma last year.
Yep, that is correct.
Was there? Okay, all right. And then, so you came to the MSE show, and then you came to finals, and you were primarily competing those two events, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then this year, somewhere in between, you decided to go all in and showed up at Mecca Judges Training along with your wife and I believe one or two other people from the Austin, Texas area where you're from. And then a week later, we were all in Austin where you brought in Travis Chin and Keith Turner to do an IASCA Judges Training there in Austin where all of you went through there again and I presume several others. I guess, first of all, what got you interested in kind of going into the judges event promotion side of things that rapidly?
Well, mostly I got tired of driving so much. I had spent like the entire fall in 2019 driving back and forth all over different shows, all over the place. And I was like, you know what? There are no shows in Texas whatsoever, so we're going to have to do something different about that.
Texas is a big place. There should be right. more shows than that, especially yeah. considering the amount of talent that's there.
Well, and like the only ones we have are like, you know, Heat Wave and stuff like that, where there's no SQ. It's like, it's a mess. It's hard, you know, it's hard to do anything. I'm like, this is dumb. You know, if I wanted SPL, I could do all kinds of things, but for SQ, there's just nothing here. So I just went about changing that. So now I don't have to drive so much.
There you go. Yeah, I just got to find some more people to get involved so you can compete again.
Yeah, and, you know, I still have my cars and I'm still building them, you know, mostly, you know, for me, you know, for the promotion side of things is it's good. I mean, I like competing and everything, but really it's about community and it's about getting people together to enjoy things and you know, show what they're doing. So my cars are mostly going to be, you know, demo things to show, you know, maybe new competitors. They just give them more, you know, sometimes the actual competitors aren't 100% available to be able to demo all the time. I mean, some people are really good about it. Some people really don't, but just to have at every event, there'll be at least, you know, a couple of cars that are wide open for demos all the time, you know, so.
To compare some old blood to new blood, which I don't normally like to do, but in terms of that side of it, you know, I think nowadays, especially I like to view judging and judges more as coaches versus dictators.
Mm-hmm.
It's not as much of a, oh, here I'm the ultimate authority and I am the end all judgment of sound. And here I am to tell you how you failed to meet that versus, hey, you know, here's where I'm coming from. Here's what I'm hearing. And how can we use that to make your system sound better?
For sure.
I think that's more of the approach now, especially with doing multiple organizations. It takes away that we have the sound mentality and more of, hey, we have a lot of experience to bring to the table. We've done this for a while. We have a reference to bring to the table and let's compare that to what you've done. And anybody doing this, for the most part, bringing their car in is there, I think, to some of them are there just to win a trophy, but I think most are wanting to make it sound better. But going through multiple judges trainings recently from multiple organizations and then working to start, you know, promoting events at that level, I mean, and you already brought up community. What's your angle on what you're bringing to the Texas community with your desire to bring events there and judge? You already have a base there ready to go, but what drew you to competition in the first place? And where do you get your kicks off in doing both competing and offering the competitions?
Competition is something that I've been around a long time and it seems to be a common story these days. Like I did it way back when. Life happened, didn't do it for a long time, came back and was like, wow, where'd everything go, right? And I'm also in a different region now. I used to be up north where there was stuff all the time, and I came down here and I was so surprised that there just wasn't anything going on. Things had advanced so much in that time that I was gone that I just really wanted to, you know, kind of figure out how things were and experiment with some things and whatever. And one of the best, always the, one of the best ways to make my stuff better back in the day was to take it and compete with it. That way you get lots of feedback and you hear all those things. And that's, you know, you get people's different people's views on what's good and what's bad. So I started that with, and the, from the competitor side, that's what I started with. I just basically started throwing things in a car and playing with them and figuring it out, and, you know, made about five different revisions of the first system, and then went and built a whole other car and all this stuff, just fiddling around last year. You know, again, I started listening to the community and, you know, what people looked for. I stumbled across SQology mostly by accident and thought that it was really cool in that, you know, most all SQology events have some kind of community based thing. You know, there's some kind of gathering or some kind of, you know, seminar or some kind of speaker, some kind of something that brings people some benefit without just being a show. Right.
Right.
So I thought that was really cool. And it, I'm a technical trainer, you know, for, it's about 50% of my job description. Right. So that's kind of, it resonates with me, right. That would be doing that kind of stuff. So I just kind of took what I do and what I like to do, and that's help explain and share what I love with other people and bring that to what we'd like to do here. Another one of the things that I do professionally is, like I said, training, evaluate, you know, and building evaluations and building content around that kind of stuff. So on the promotion side, one thing I noticed is, for better or worse, one of the major complaints from competitors, whether it's, you know, not saying anything one way or another, but one of the major complaints is differences in judging and differences in criteria and kind of how things are measured. And like, you go to one show and you score super high, and then you go to another show and your score, you know, you haven't changed anything. Or if you go to a show one day and you get, you know, run through and you get, you know, this score, and then the next day it's the exact same judge and you haven't touched anything and it's a completely different score, right? So So I sought out trying to objectify that process as much as I could, which was going through the judges training and really driving home, you know, figuring, getting it from the source, right? The heads of those organizations to get the essence of really exactly what we're looking for, and try and help train, you know, my crew here so that we're as consistent as we can possibly be across that process.
What'd you learn in that process of going through the judges trainings and finding the evaluation? I mean, I've been doing this for 20 years and gone through thousands of score sheets, and I don't think I've found the answer yet.
Well, what I learned is it's really hard. I learned that it's really hard because even if you approach it exactly the same way every time, you physically are different day to day. Right. And that's one of the inherent problems. There's ways to make it good. Right. And there are good examples of it across the various orgs. Like, you know, there are judges that are on any given day will be within a few points of each other, no matter what.
Right.
Right. And trying to distill that process. And it's really about process and being able to work with those folks, you know, that are consistent and like, all right, I hear this, help me translate that to points.
Right.
You're figuring out what the weighting is. Like, I hear something wrong. Here's what it is. You know, how does that best translate into the points based on the scale we have? And sometimes it's some of the things, the more technical things are pretty easy. Right. But the, you know, there are some things that are indeed somewhat subjective, but just, you know, kind of minimizing that overall variance as much as we can is the goal. Mm-hmm. It is something it's never going to be perfect, but we can certainly strive to make it as good as we can be.
No, absolutely. And I think garnering the feedback is just as, if not more important than the score itself. I mean, obviously we're trying to score to the score sheet as much as, or the rule book as much as possible and be consistent within that. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to, was the outcome appropriate car to car?
Right.
And we've talked about it before, but I think the next step is really figuring out a good way to have the data available to the competitor as to, in more minute detail, how they stacked up on that day. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily just their total score to score, because say in Mecca, for example, you know, two 70.5 cars both of them 70.5 points could sound completely different.
I probably do, right?
Yeah, right. So it's one of those things where, you know, at least if I know, okay, well, you know, I was above average for width compared to the other scores given by that judge, but my sub-bass tonality score was 20% lower than everybody else's, then maybe at least I can take a look at that and see not just what my score sheet says, but how that compares to the scores given by other people. It's
right.
Depth is a great one, especially on the ASCA score sheet, because everybody kind of has continued to interpret that differently. Mm-hmm. And so one judge might give me a 10 on depth and another judge might give me a 4 on depth. And I see those two scores, maybe they come across for this in the same day. And I say, well, this judge, how are those two things so much different?
Right.
And I would agree with that. But at the same time, it would be the automatic assumption in our head is to say, well, the judge that gave me a 10 was right, and the judge that gave me 4 was incorrect, and the judge that gave me a 10 helped me win, and the judge that gave me a 4 helped me lose.
Right.
When the judge giving a 10, or I'm using a bad example because I'm maxing out the score already, but let's say it's an 8 versus a 4. The judge giving a 4, his highest might have been his or her highest might have been a 5, whereas the one giving me an 8, their highest might be a 10.
Relative scale, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Understanding where you fit in a more minute detail, I think is an important next step in how we make the scoring portion of it more valuable to the competitor. But, you know, having that feedback from multiple people, and I think we've both said it, you know, plenty of times to plenty of competitors over the years, but one person tells you it, eh.
Yeah.
If 3 or 4 people tell you the same thing, then maybe regardless of what your personal bias is on the matter, maybe you need to take a look at it.
Right. And that's part of my philosophy for nearly everything, right? If I've got one data point that tells me a thing, that doesn't necessarily mean anything. If I've got 10 data points that say the same thing, then chances are we're getting closer to something that's the truth. You can talk to any 10 people and ask them about a specific event, and they're going to tell you 10 different versions of that story, but the common things between them are probably true.
Right, right. Obviously, you've been around Car Audio for more than a day or two, but as far as kind of looking at things from inside the wheelhouse in terms of the competition and the organization side of it, and, you know, so many people, you know, over the years have, well, why do I get last place in ASCA and first place in Mecca, or vice versa? And I can never win in ASCA, but then I can, you know, slay in Mecca, or again, vice versa. In coming in through the judges' trainings for both of them, and I would say that this year, you know, you coming through this year on judges training isn't necessarily indicative of any great change, because, you know, Travis and Keith have both been involved in ASCA for a long time.
Right.
Obviously, everybody handling the Mecca judges trainings has been doing that for a long time. So both ASCA and Mecca are very, they have their system down in how they want to approach judges training. Mm-hmm. What was your experience in those two, and how would you contrast them and how they approached the judging?
At the root of it, they're both, you know, looking for good sounding cars, but they're honestly looking at approaching it slightly differently, in that they look for essentially the same things, but weight them slightly differently.
Okay.
So if your car is super technical, it's probably going to score better in ASCA. If it feels really good to listen to, it's probably going to score good in Mecca, right? They're just a little bit different in their focus from what I've seen. Like, all the same elements are there, right? Tonality is there, and imaging is there, placement's there, all that. There's more space on the ASCA sheet for technical bits. Mm-hmm. to take a little more precedence, and the Mecca sheet is more like, I would say it's like the performer's sheet, right, where it's more about the dynamics and impact and feeling and those kinds of things. There's more weight to that in that sheet. So even though they're measuring the same things, they're putting different relative weights in different places. So if your vehicle is built toward one sheet, then it may lose some points in the other, right? And I mean, if you built the car that does everything, I would love to see it, because I want to hear it, right? But then fine, you'll score great in both. But there are always, as a competitor, there are trade-offs, right? Sometimes that, and some people do, and some people score well in both, and that's awesome. But if you bias your tuning or build or sound, right, to one set of criteria at the expense of others, that's where you see those differences.
Absolutely. And I think, too, IASCA is a little bit more the overall approach from ground up, not necessarily just the score sheet or just how it's judged, but the theory behind it. I feel IASCA lives more in the theory, mm-hmm. and Mecca lives more in the experiential,
right. the visceral element, right, of the sound, right?
Mecca overall just kind of approaches things from a more level of experience in terms of how I experience the sound, and right. IASCA seems more theoretic in this is how the sound should be, I guess, if that makes sense, in my opinion.
Yep. No, I would agree with that as well. And like I said, it's just a little more of a, music theory versus music practice, I
guess. Right. Right. Kind of. Right. The guy who shows up and has incredible talent and is able to play their instrument and sing into a mic on a smoky bar stage all night versus the first violinist in a philharmonic, it's, they're both music. They're both approaching things in a very similar way. Good music is good music, right? But I absolutely agree. It's approaching it from a slightly different angle. And I think Mecca 2, it's one of those things where, hey, let's crank it. I'm not saying Mecca's inherently loud or IASCA is inherently quiet, but I do think that the systems that perform at a level and are tuned at a level when it's cranked up a little bit mm-hmm. are going to perform better in Mecca, and those systems that are more tamed and, maybe listening at the home audio or
right, the ideal, 90 dB, live, kind of,
yeah, live jazz session type level is going to be more in the IASCA realm.
Yeah, you can definitely pick up a lot of points in Mecca if it can take the power, if it gets loud, and still right. sounds good, you can definitely pick up some points there and for dynamics and whatnot. But both approaches are good. They're just slightly different, right?
I think that explains if you take everybody likes to use ice skating as an example for a comparison, but I would say, like livestock judging or doing 4-H or stuff like that is kind of a little bit more appropriate in that a lot of times knowing the judge going into those situations, you kind of fit for the judge in that scenario. And I would say in this case, if you, again, like you said, if your system does everything and is able to perform on all those levels, great. If not, maybe, think about what you're approaching a little bit and follow and learn on what's happening with the different organizations and judges that you're regularly competing with, and be able to kind of play the system to work into that, because everybody has their little bit of preference. Everybody hears a little bit differently. Everybody's body shape is different. There's a lot of things to consider in that. And, at the end of the day, I think it's appropriate that RTA competing on the RTA has kind of fallen off the wayside, and for all its imperfections, people continue to gravitate towards sound quality judging for all its imperfections. Mm-hmm. I think there's a reason for that, in that there is a little bit of a play in the odds. There is a little bit of a gamble to it. There is a little bit of a unknown, and that's kind of exciting.
Right.
But taking the time to understand the feedback from every judge that you has the opportunity to listen to your car and gain from that, to use that to then compete at a higher level, is always going to, pay dividends.
Sure.
Simply saying that, well, it sounds good to me, isn't playing the game,
Right.
And you're not really going to grow in that, because you're not experimenting into different things. You're not experiencing new things. everybody that is doing this is doing it for a reason, and they have passion and they have experience behind it, and they have a reason they're saying what they're saying. So for the most part, I think we can all learn from each other. It's just a matter of being able to take that and process it and then use it to actually become better.
Right. And yeah, the biggest thing, you know, with an approach to judging for sure is like, you don't want to ever like, oh, this thing's terrible and this is all the reasons why, you know, like that's not, you don't want to be scolding somebody for putting this something together and bringing it out for you to listen to it. Right. Like that's right. Always a thankful, grateful interaction there. Thanks for bringing the, you know, and let, you know, I, you know, here are four or five great things and here are maybe a couple of things that I, you know, that I heard here that, you know, could potentially, you know, get you more points or whatever. The final thing I wanted to say about the two different orgs is the selection of music that we judge with is very indicative of the type of sound that each is looking for, right?
Yeah.
The Mecha CD is all music, and it has, you know, those tracks are selected to showcase the things that Mecha is looking for.
Absolutely.
And the same thing with the Ayahuasca disc, right?
There's lots of clues.
Yeah, for sure. So, I mean, if you can play both of them and they both sound fantastic, then score. You've probably got a pretty well-rounded system. But if you focused a lot on specific things, you'll hear those other things come out in listening to the other disc. So that would be some advice I'd give. You know, another thing, as you mentioned about like knowing the judge or knowing what they're like and all that. So that's why I made an attempt to attend and host these other trainings, is to, for us as judges, be able to talk to as many other judges as possible. Yeah. To kind of build that shared understanding of what we're looking for, so that we're at least all coming from the same place. Right.
Right.
So I think that's kind of important as well. You know, I'll tell us a quick competitor story about another organization, neither of the ones that we're working for now, but, or we're hosting for now, but where knowing the crowd, even though it resulted in a car that didn't sound as good objectively, still takes home the trophy, right? One of the first few shows that I'd competed in, I went there knowing that this particular set of folks was, you know, really heavy on the low end, focused on the low end, right? It's got to have impact, it's got to have a bunch of bass, right? So I tuned the car that way, and, you know, some other folks that are generally Mecha Ayahuasca competitors or whatever, I'm like, you can listen to it. Yeah, it does. Sure, it sounds like crap though. And they're like, you get in, and like, yep, it's, you know, it rattles, and it's, you know, there's all kinds of, it's just, you know, beating your head in with the sub and all this stuff.
Right.
But I guess who took the trophy home that day, because that's what that judge was looking for, right? Yeah, that's, it's about playing the game. It's about putting points on the score sheet, right? And you'll see that difference too a lot in competitors. And there are a couple of different kinds of competitors, I think, right? There are ones that build their car to put points on the score sheet, and there are ones that try to build it to sound as good as it can. And those aren't necessarily the same thing.
Right.
Right. And you can see that in maybe sometimes in the compromises of the build or tuning. You know, if you've built it to put points on the score sheet because you want the trophy, that's one thing, but that may or may not make it sound the best.
Right. Absolutely. And there's some things that, like, I think Mark Eldridge's NASCAR is a good example of a vehicle that does some crazy good things that isn't able to show up on the score sheet at right. an appropriate measure to actually make it win. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the danger too. We've talked about before, but the danger as well, when you as a competitor say, well, I listened to all the other cars and there's no way that car beat mine because it doesn't sound as good as mine. And obviously there's a whole lot of problems with that.
Yeah. There's a lot to unpack there.
Right. Because, you know, there's obviously the confirmation bias that, you know, my car sounds the best because it sounds the best to me. And it's one of those things, well, it immediately goes into conspiracy theories because, as you know, the judges are kind of really the ones who are the athletes of the day. You know, they're the ones, mm-hmm. the judges are really kind of the ones who are on display for their ability to separate and, you know, sort the cars. And so that, you know, makes it kind of easy for the competitor to, you know, regardless of how good or how experienced or how new they are, whomever, to be able to play a armchair role in how it's determined. But I think that's not, when you're judging, and you probably understand this better now than previous, you know, when you're judging, you're really not thinking about all the things that people think you're thinking about. You know what I mean? It's like, right. By the time you're in the second or third car, you know, it's just like me, the score sheet, what I'm hearing and what people might think we're thinking as you're judging. I would really encourage them to, even if they are just listening, pick one score sheet with the approved, you know, list of music that goes along with that and sort your songs and then go listen to eight cars and do a mock score sheet and see what you come up with. And I think you'll find, even if you're not, even if you're doing that without the full knowledge of what you're supposed to be doing, just going through that process might put you in more of the mindset of what a judge is doing versus what you think they're doing.
Right. And that's the thing with the judging process, right? It, like, I have absolutely given the win to a car that I didn't feel sounded the best because it put the points on the score sheet. My job as a judge is to evaluate how well it puts points on the score sheet regardless. So it's, you know, it's one of those things, right? Like, as a judge, the process you're going through is each individual category on the score sheet. And how does that, how do these, how do what I'm hearing translate to these specific points? And, you know, as I previously mentioned, that may or may not be the best sounding car.
I've always encouraged somebody, even if you're not going to judge, and even if you think you're not going to gain a great deal from it, you know, I think it's still valuable to go through the judge training process just to understand better how each organization and each judge are approaching the situation. You clearly came into this with a purpose to judge, to promote events, to take it to the next level. So you were approaching it from a very, hey, I'm here to be a judge and to do this job, and I wanted to do it to the best of my ability. But with your competitor hat on, having done that, do you feel that you learned valuable information going through both of those judges' trainings that you'd be able to take back and say you weren't going to be a judge tomorrow, you weren't going to do an event, anything else, you were just going to go back and compete? Do you think you gained enough valuable information from that process to be worth it to go back as a competitor and be a better competitor because of it?
Oh, I would absolutely say that. And I would absolutely say that we should, as organizers and event promoters, do more things like what we did at MSE last year with the competitor seminar, which is, would be like the distilled down version of the part of the judges training that matters to the competitor.
Right.
Because I think there'd be a lot of value in that. You know, you don't need to come sit for 3 days, you know, right, or whatever, to do the full judges training,
right,
to get that information. And one of the things that I've found most valuable about that at Mark's, and then replicated it here with the IASCA training we did, is having a reference system available,
right,
so that competitors, judges, whoever, because a couple of our attendees at the IASCA training were in fact competitors, just come in to get a better idea of how things operate. And, you know, having that reference with the media and listening to what the judges are listening for, listening to it on a system that's not a car, because a lot of competitors, their reference is the car, which is, you know, there are a million reasons why that's bad, but, you know, having something that where you can sit with judges and listen to what they're listening for and talk about why that's there and,
right,
you know, those kinds of things is invaluable as a competitor.
Absolutely agree. And I think the more we can bring, obviously this year through a wrench in everybody's plans, but I do think the more we can bring that experience to the competitors as part of an event and being able to go to the event at MSC, it's very apparent that there is no reference system because
right,
obviously when you sure, listen to the three different systems that Mark has set up identically in the same building, all three of those sound entirely different. So, you know, for anybody to say, oh, we need the reference, here's these magical headphones or here's these speakers or here's whatever, It's very apparent that all that is thrown out the window as soon as music starts playing, because right, every situation is different.
Yeah, and there's no A reference, right? It's right, everyone has a reference, but it's a collection of all of the music they've ever heard on everything they've ever heard it on, right?
Right.
And what their perception of what right sounds like. So if you can have something that's of good quality to listen to things on, you, chances are you can pick out the same things, right, at that point.
Right.
But there's never a reference.
So, quick update on finals. After last week I kind of put out more details on what we were looking at doing and everything. About the time that episode released, then things went sideways with our plans in Dallas. So we're still working that out. I would say at this point, we are more than likely to end up either at an alternative location in Dallas or at Mobile Toys, because we're definitely more COVID proof there. We're more off the map and don't really have to worry about anything else at that point. But we'll see. So right now, jury's still out. That weekend is an absolute. However, where it is in Dallas, or whether it's there or at Mobile Toys, is yet to be determined. So what's going to happen is, as soon as I release this podcast episode, then everything will change, and then I'll have to update again.
Either way, it's still great for me. So I
approve. All right. It's still Texas. So I would say, if you fly into Texas, if you're flying or if you're making plans, don't get a hotel yet. But if at least you're in Dallas by, say, Thursday, then you're pretty much guaranteed to be able to make things happen from there. So, yeah, we're not, I promise nobody is trying to delay anything. It's simply a matter of trying to knock all this down in times that are ever changing. This past weekend, we had an event north of Chicago area, Eschewology Cubby Land, which was IASCA 1X, Mecca 3X, and actually the first EMMA regional event ever, and went really well. We had, I think, 16 or 17 cars all together. For the most part, I mean, there was three or four that, you know, kind of picked and choosed a little bit, but I think we had 12 or 13 people that did all three formats, EMMA, IASCA, and Mecca. And it was actually really kind of take a look, obviously, with the Eschewologist Award, keeping track of seeing how far people are traveling, because that's part of the points. It was actually one of the few events that I've seen where, you know, everybody kind of traveled a very similar amount. You know, some events you have like four or five people that traveled 12 miles to get there, and then you have another set of people that traveled 150, 200 miles, then four or five people that traveled 600 miles. And in this case, it was maybe a little bit more per person, but I think overall it was actually a little bit lower mileage overall for everybody to get there. So that's the first time we've done an event up there. All the events that we've done in Illinois have been in Bloomington, which is kind of in the more middle part of the state. And obviously, Chicago is kind of more in the extremities, but then Ohio and Wisconsin and Iowa and Indiana, and everybody was kind of able to get there in a very similar fashion. So it worked out really well. No, zero issues in terms of, you know, everybody followed the rules well in terms of the COVID stuff, keeping their mask on inside. For the most part, it was actually a pretty nice day. So for the most part, we were outside. It was said before, where I've had issues in my right ear over time just from being sick and that, having issues with my eustachian tube. And apparently from last year to this year, I lost like 90, 95 pounds now. Mm. And apparently when you're obese, fat develops around your ear canal and everything. And then when you have kind of rapid weight loss like I did, that fat goes away and then your ear doesn't quite know what to do.
So what you're saying is you had a fat head.
Yeah, right. Right. So I had a fat head, and then the fat head went away, and now my ear doesn't know what to do. So keeping it like engaged has been very tough. So the last time I really judged a lot of cars was Slamology last year around the same time. And so I thought I'd be fine, and I don't really have an issue with the feedback or scoring, but it was a long day trying to keep my ear engaged to be able to do it. So yeah, this past week, this is probably the last event I'll judge this past weekend, but I'm glad they're other people like you and others that are coming up in the ranks to do so. So it's actually my 14-year-old. Well, how old is he now? 15? I guess he's 15 now. Yeah. Well, he just had a birthday like 2 weeks ago, so I was trying to remember if he turned 13 to 14 or 14 to 15. But yeah. Anyway, so my 15-year-old went through judges training, mecha judges training at the same time as Justin and his wife. And so he judged mecha at the show in Georgia a couple months ago. And I mean, nobody shot him, I guess, because he was, you know, 14 years old. You can't get too angry at him. But
I mean, he's I guarantee he's got more hearing range than any of the rest of us.
right. When it comes down to quality hearing, you know, it's just a matter of translating that to a score sheet. But when it comes down to the quality of hearing, he's probably beating us all.
Yeah, he hasn't abused it all yet.
Yeah. He's had more consistent good references than I did. but yeah. So anyway, I'm thankful for anybody going through judges training right now, because we need judges. And some of us are getting old and decrepit and our bodies are falling apart. We can't do anything right anymore.
Yeah.
At least I can still do math. So that's
helpful. Yeah.
I know how to do a spreadsheet and use math. So I'm good. I'm good there. Anyways.
Speaking of that, that's, you know, the judges training that we did this spring, I'm intending to, you know, provided the world hasn't burned by then, continue to make that an annual event here. So
awesome.
We can continue to calibrate, you know, every year and make sure we're, you know, as up to date as possible.
Right. No, that's great. I think that's great. This coming weekend, we are doing basically the same thing, same event. So it's going to be a 1X Iasca and 3X Mecha event this weekend in Florence, Alabama at Audio X, which will also be an inaugural event. We have never done an event in Alabama or at Audio X before. In fact, I've never been there. I've been within like 30 minutes of Audio X, but I've actually never been to the shop. So we are going to be there this weekend. I am not judging. Yay, tip for everybody. So Aaron Hardison, as we mentioned last week, will be judging. I believe if everything works out, Mr. Hogan will be judging Mecca. And then Mr. Price, you are having an event, September 19?
That is correct.
In Austin again, so that'll be the second. I think this might be the only place this year that has two events in 1 year. It's going to be the second Austin event of the year. We were there, as mentioned, around the Iasca judges training. Was that
March 1st?
March 1st, yeah. Can't remember if it was February or March, but yeah, it was week after Freeze.
It was the last weekend of February, first weekend of March. So,
gotcha.
Technically both.
Yeah. That's why I was like, I had both in my head, and I was like, oh, that makes sense. That's why it's been like 17 years since February. So,
right, yes, absolutely. The whole world has caught fire since then.
It seems like an entirely different time. Like, it's crazy.
Well, that was the day of the event on for the first on that Sunday was the first confirmed case of COVID in the US that same day.
Yeah, because I was traveling in Texas that following week, and we were in San Antonio, I want to say Tuesday or Wednesday of that week, and like the afternoon we were in San Antonio and then driving back north, and like 2 or 3 hours after we were in San Antonio, they started shutting down a mall because there was a COVID case that broke.
Yep.
Like there, and there were some travelers that were in San Antonio from a mall at the mall or something. And yeah, and then it just went downhill from there. So anyway, this Austin event will be different than the first, obviously. I think you've for sure pretty much nailed down all the precautions, but you're going to have scheduled time slots for each class, right?
Yeah, I'm trying to make it as flexible for people as possible, but still, you know, keep to all the regulations and all that. We do still have some ordinances here and about the number of people that can be in a gathering, et cetera, et cetera. So once I'm cutting off the registrations 2 days early, so I can build a map of how I can, you know, put the different things together. One thing to say is it's a bonus point event, except it's not like the way you think it is, right? They're both 2X, Iasca and Mecha, but basically the first ticket would be a 2x regular 2x ticket, and that actually gets you the a free round of the other body, right? So okay. The one ticket gives you a single Ayahuasca entry and a single Mecca entry for the price of a single 2x entry, right?
Okay.
And then any additional seats or classes, you'll get that same. You can do them individual classes, in either one if you want. You'll get the 1x fee for those as well, right? So it's bonus in that way, as it's, if you absolutely don't want to stay for the other org or whatever, you don't have to, but it's included as part of, it's included for free as part of the ticket. So, and then we'll do time classes, time blocks for you. We'll do depending on how many entries we have, we'll have the first group 4 or 5 cars or whatever, and then get them in, start that judging process, and then half an hour later or whatever, bring another set in, and that way it gives people flexibility. Like if you want to stay out of, hang out in the parking lot outside or whatever, you can. If you want to leave and get out, you can. So that, we can keep the gatherings to a minimum, keep, let people that are, more concerned or more vulnerable or whatever, they can go ahead and get out and be, minimal exposure. And then we'll continue to do that. We've got a really reasonably short time window. So we'll actually have, I think, 4 judges for this, just so we can get everybody in and out in 6 hours.
And then you're doing this basically at night, right? You're starting four o'clock on Saturday and then go until 10.
Yeah. And that's because of some scheduling stuff with the judges that are going to be working. So,
but I think it's actually kind of cool. I mean, I think, at least not on purpose. Maybe Aggieland a couple times has turned into a night event, but I don't think I've ever really done an evening or night event on purpose. But I think that's a pretty cool concept on its own, especially with the heat and everything else. And this time of year, I think it's a good time.
Yeah. That's a huge part of it, is getting it cooled down. I'm starting to get it cooled down a little bit, so we're not out in the blistering sun all day here in Texas in the summer.
Right. And it's a Tent World again, same location we had it in March, right?
Yep, that is correct. Yep. Unless it get, well, so that I guess that's another thing that I will say. Right now I've limited it to 25 entries because that's all that Tent World will support. If we sell all of those out and people still want to come, then I have an alternate venue that's slightly bigger as well that we could potentially move to, but there's a cost associated with it, so I'm not going to do that unless we need to.
I gotcha. Yeah, kind of build it as it grows.
Right.
I would guess that you'll probably be fine with 2025 there this time of year. And then you're doing all the feedback and everything via score sheet that will be sent to them later with their trophy, if applicable, correct?
Yep. And I promise all the feedback will be transcribed to text, not chicken scratch, so that you'll actually be able to read it. The judges' emails and phone numbers will be attached to it. So if you have questions, we're doing standard certificate awards, and those will be mailed out as well. We'll do a Facebook Live thing to announce results like the Parkinson's one was.
Right. Perfect. Awesome. Well, sounds cool. I wish you best of luck with that. I'm sure you won't need it. But if anybody wants to get tickets to that, or obviously show that they're planning to attend, if they want to do that, you can do that just by going to the Eschewology Facebook page, look under the events, and the link is there for the tickets as well. Or you can message us or email or whatever. We can get you the link if you're not on Facebook. But that's all publicly, even if you don't have an account, Facebook account, you can still access that information fairly easily via the Eschewology Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/Eschewology. And then just go to events, and it is there. Again, it's September 19th on a Saturday. It starts at 4 o'clock to 10 o'clock. The tickets and pre-registration are required because of what Jeremy just said. And I think it should be a good event. We had a fair number of people there in March, and obviously not everybody was expecting that to be their only event.
If we'd have known that.
if only we had been able to sell it as this is the only event. It's this until finals, and by the way, finals is going to be in Texas.
Yeah, no one would have believed you if you'd have said that.
Right. The whole world is going to go insane. This is your one event for the year. This event in Hutto, Texas, and you'll have a chance of finals because it's going to be in Texas. So, be there, be square.
Everybody must go.
Anyway, Jeremy, I certainly appreciate your time. Appreciate you discussing things. Like I said, I think your perspective is great, being the amount of time and effort and energy that you've really put into this over the past year. And I'm sure we were all hoping and dreaming and planning for a different outcome for this year with you doing all the making all those efforts. But
yeah, you know, we'll just leave it to me to try and do something, and then the whole kind of catch the whole world on fire.
Right. So, Jeremy shall not take over Cardio this year. He has to wait till next year. Right. So anyway, I appreciate it, sir, and we will talk soon.
All right, man. Have a good one. Thanks for having me.